But first up here, the idea that opposites attract, and not only attract, maybe stay together for a while. We've all seen this, you know, maybe in your own life and certainly those you're around. You know, she's neat, he's sloppy, she's organized, he's spontaneous, kind of wild and crazy. She's an extrovert, maybe he's an introvert, and somehow they click. You know what? That's not all that uncommon. You don't have to have everything aligned perfectly. And sometimes having a trait that the other side doesn't is a plus. But what about when one person is really good, wonderful, terrific, caring, sensitive, the other person is mean, nasty, judgmental, awful? They just, you know, how do these two stay together for so long? And why do good people stay with people like that? Well, Dr. John Braccio here this morning at drjohnb.com at the other end of our line as well. Doc, good morning.
Well, good morning to you, Dave, and congratulations on another MSU graduate.
That'd
be a proud day.
It is. It's like I gave myself a raise, too.
So we're just going to add that. Your wallet gets a little bigger
now.
Yeah,
it's not too bad. Well, you know, but I was just talking there about opposites attracting on the one hand, but, you know, we're talking about polar opposites in how you treat, you know, people in general. And that, why do people stay with those? Why do they love people like that that treat both them and others so poorly?
Well, let me preface it by saying it's so sad and tragic when this happens to good people. And sad and tragically, it happens all the time. And what we're normally looking at, we're looking at persons that can come from dysfunctional homes.
Yeah.
Their emotional needs weren't met. They really felt abandoned even if they lived in their own home. They developed low self-esteem in the process, meaning I really don't deserve things. Because they didn't get nurturing, they need it so badly. They try to develop a nurturing personality, a caring personality, and often develop it. But sadly, they don't know what any sense of normality would be, and they often look for people to change, and often, oddly, sadly, like people that didn't nurture them, and their goal is to try to really change them, and this doesn't work. So nothing is too much emotional effort or too expensive even to save your lover. And often they'll accept blame, guilt, responsibility for the condition of the relationship. So it just leads to tragedy, sadness, and when you're involved like a therapist like I am, or if you're a parent or if you're a friend, it's just baffling. But if you don't realize that they're living in a world of dream over reality, they're in a situation where they just seem to live this drama-filled life where there isn't the stability or the stableness that you're really looking for, you really need in a relationship. So it's really very, very sad, and it's so common, men and women, getting into these kinds of relationships, and there's really a need to really start focusing on the as thyself and love thy neighbor and start really, well, I mean, and starting to really put yourself in a positive way first, and you have to start really managing, you know, controlling your, you know, yourself instead of trying to manage and control the other person, and start dealing with positive self-talk where you're really saying positive things and what you deserve. So very, very messy, difficult pathway for the good, caring person, often from the dysfunctional home.
When you deal with clients like this, and you do, and you have, you've said you have a lot of them.
Okay, oh, yes, over the years.
Yeah, so what do you, I know that your general, you know, your mindset, I've known you a long time. You're pro-marriage, you want relationships to work out, you believe that the investment in relationships is a payoff in and of itself over the years. But you know, when you see something like this that's purely toxic, do you try to talk them into stepping away a little bit, or at least reflecting more on what got them into this position and why they are so vulnerable? What do you do to a client like that?
Well, it depends on where they are. Often it's just the client coming in, indicating that they'll even set up in a meeting saying they have the problem. And then when they come in, I say, well, you do have the problem, but it isn't the problem you think you have. Oh. It isn't that you're not caring enough or not loving enough. It's basically you're dealing with someone who withholds love. It's very conditional. And some oftentimes are just plain mean-spirited. I just talk, if two people come in, I mean, by the way, often the guilt giver, if you will, is generally not ready to work on things. But if you run into someone who really is and tries to change, there's always hope if you have two people really trying to work on things. But let's assume that the other person isn't willing. I don't just tell a person, or nor would a therapist or a friend just say, kick that guy out or kick that girl out or something like that. No, you talk to them, you try to sort out what's going on, and you try to really talk to them about what is a good relationship, what is a respectful relationship, what is a non-drama-filled relationship, what is something like this, like, and try to help them themselves. You don't do it, but you try to help guide them to a point that they're willing to make changes. And if a person goes to the effort of calling someone, meeting with them, pouring out their heart, saying things, often they're at a stage where they're really ready to make some changes. Not always willing to carry forward, but often in the situation where they're ready to start looking at the problem.
Yeah, you just said it. They've already taken the first step, and that's an important one.
That's right. That's right. But I will tell you, Dave, it's so much more common than you might think. We just kind of get used to seeing people together, and we get used to seeing people that really are relatively, to the world, dysfunctional, but they're totally dysfunctional at home. And then when they have children, often the children take the path of becoming a user or a giver, and that's the bad combination. That's another. My mother always divided the world into givers and takers, and always felt bad when a giver and a taker got together, but they often seem to be attracted because one wants to give and one wants to take. So you really have to work at learning how to, if you find people that give 60-40, each way, then they each get 50. But that's hard to do if you're not dealing with people that have grown up in functional environments, or they've been able to overcome what happened in their youth and growing up in the modeling they saw.
Yeah, and that's not easy for anybody.
Very difficult.
It becomes like an emotional ATM with withdrawals all on one side.
Very good way of putting it.
Not a good thing overall, but something that's important to confront. And, of course, as we do here, Discuss, the podcast will be available very shortly here at drjohnb.com. And all of the podcasts are there on such a wide variety of subjects that make us all the unique people that we are and give us hope and help in the very real sense. Regional Psychological Services, East Lansing, our good friend, Dr. John Braccio. Always good to talk to you, sir.
Always a pleasure, Dave. Good luck, my friend.
All right, thank you, and thank you for the well wishes, too. This is 1320 WILS.